everyone, it's Chloe, and I'm so excited to share something fabulous with you, Vogue's first ever global fashion community, Vogue Club. Our members get to mingle with Vogue editors, yes, including me, and fellow fashion enthusiasts at exclusive events around the world. And that's just the start. Membership opens doors to the fashion industry, bringing you expert career advice and insider style and beauty tips. What are you waiting for? Head over to Vogue.com/membership to join, and here's a little treat. Use code TRT20 and snag 20% off your membership. That's TRT20 for 20% off your ticket to Vogue Club. Are you in?
This is The Run-Through. I'm Cho Minardi.
And I'm Chloe Mel. And this week we are lucky enough to have, hot off the tarmac,
literally hot off the tarmac,
Nicole Phelps, yes, and Mark Holgate. Would you like to introduce yourselves, our friends?
I'm Nicole Phelps, and I am the global director of Vogue Runway and Vogue Business.
I'm Mark Holgate, and I have got my title. I think it might be fashion feature director now. And global lead on something or other? I don't know. It's changed so much.
Perfect.
I work at Vogue. A lot.
Well, I wanted to start with bed bugs.
Ooh, why are we starting with bed bugs?
Well, I think it's newsy. It's exciting.
Okay, so what's the deal with bed bugs?
Somebody, well, Nicole just got off a flight, and she went straight home and packed up all of her clothes.
In plastic bags.
In plastic bags.
They're in a freezer now somewhere.
Yeah, the freezer's the best way to get rid of them.
I thought the hot dryer
also
worked.
Both. Extreme heat or extreme cold.
I'm going to be doing some hot drying.
Tend to find that works with relationships, too.
You want to get rid of a bed bug or a boyfriend.
Heard her on the runway. Right, what are we called? Run through. Mark, when did you get back?
I got back Sunday night, but I'd been in London the week of Paris. I went to Milan, but not Paris.
Okay. And Nicole,
and
you
no
are
bugs.
Hot off the flight.
I'm hot off the Air France flight.
Okay.
After one was canceled last night.
Oh, oof. So you literally have swooped into the office off a plane. We bow down.
I love the run through.
Well, the run through loves you back.
Thank you.
So tell us, what were the best shows?
Should we start in Milan? Well, Bottega Veneta for me was just yet another masterclass from Mathieu Blasé in terms of craft and construction and imagination and narrative and just a kind of sheer amazement, really, at the kind of level of work that he can create and that his ateliers can create. And it always feels very personal. I don't know. I mean, it's interesting when you lead one of those big Italian artisanal, quote-unquote, luxury houses. It always just feels so deeply personal with Mathieu, right? There was this whole narrative around the sea and travel and different eras and time travel. And it all sounds quite abstract and intellectual when you talk about it. But actually, when you saw those clothes, you were just kind of enthralled by what he's capable of and what the ateliers are capable of, no?
Agree, yes. And even some humor this time around, too, with the funny shoes and bags made with what looked like banana leaves.
Yeah, shoes look fab.
Does his stuff sell? Like, do people like that? Are we allowed to talk about
they
that?
It sells to very rich people. It's very expensive. Okay.
Everything's out of leather, so it's like, imagine a...
Well, that's why I ask. It seems very unattainable.
You know,
I feel like Chanel sells because people want that handbag, but I just am curious whether they have a hero product yet. Like, is that new bag?
I mean, you know, they've obviously got a hero product with the shoes and the bags. I mean, you know, the kind of intricato woven leather. I think we all came out lusting after something from that. No, I mean, you know, maybe it was a huge bag. I mean, looked fabulous on the runway. I was thinking, oh, could. The new carry-on, or you know, I could stick my laundry in it and take it, you know, big enough. But no, I mean, I think
put your bed bug laundry in there.
Oh, exactly.
But
I would not put the bag in the freezer or in the in extreme heat.
You know what's good about the Intrecciato is the way he's doing it now. They're unlined and they're really lightweight. Because
wow.
You know, luxury bags can be really
heavy.
And they're a pain to carry, but not Bottega Veneta.
Huh. Oh, I love that.
I learned how to pronounce it properly as well because
Because I am a bag lady. I reject the mini bag trend. I very much appreciate the Miu Miu overflowing bags because that is my life.
I'm was always, that on the Miu Miu runway?
All of the bags were like overstuffed, had shoes coming out of them. I was like, there's like a gym, like, you know.
I also love the band-aids on the feet at Miu Miu.
I mean, everything about it was so like, oh my God, I can relate. Like the collar was tucked on, one was tucked in. You're just like how I show up to most things. Sorry, I'll bounce right to the end. Let's keep going.
Gucci. Sabato De Sarno's debut.
So Gucci was a thumbs up or a thumbs down debut?
I think a thumbs up for me.
Okay.
I mean, I thought it was a lot of great clothes.
Okay.
And a great use of the logo, a great use of accessories. I think it moved it along a clip and you kind of thought, oh, okay, this looks good and fresh and exciting and relatable.
Yeah. Did it feel markedly different? Because Alessandro's Gucci was so specific, so over the top, so maximalist, granny chic. Was this an appropriate digression? Did it sort of continue that in any way?
Beyond the use of the double G, I mean, it was night and day. I mean, I loved his Sabato's.
And they needed to be, right?
I'm just wondering.
And I loved Alessandro's. I mean, yeah. I saw the last show I saw of his was the incredible one with the twins, which was deeply emotional. Again, he's another designer who really taps deep into his emotions, and then I think that comes through. And then you have always have a kind of an emotional response to his clothes. But Sabato, I mean, I think it was a very clear sense of kind of very accessible but no less chic idea of what Gucci can be in terms of its craftsmanship and look. No, but,
yes.
And also a definite, to me, a kind of sense of, it wasn't really kind of Tom Ford, because it wasn't as kind of, you know,
Tom Ford Gucci era.
Yeah, because that could be quite a kind of extreme.
His early training was as a pattern maker at Prada. And so I think you could really tell that he cares a lot about cut and fit, you know, especially with that beautiful gray coat that opened. Mm-hmm. And then a few looks later, there's the same silhouette, but sleeveless and black. And I think you'd get a lot of mileage out of something like that. Really classic and pretty timeless, I think. You know, it would last years as opposed to, oh, that's a spring 2024 coat.
Mm. Yeah.
And the jeans, even.
Yeah, and the jeans as well look terrific. I mean, I love the idea of a track suit jacket with a kind of glossy leather skirt and a stiletto sling back. Probably what I'm going to be wearing next spring. But,
You heard it here first.
Did.
Well, speaking of Tom Ford, what did we think of that? There were so many August debuts this season.
I think Peter had a very, in a way, daunting task because he had to follow in the footsteps of someone he'd worked for 25 years, someone that he's very close to, someone that he thinks of really, I think, as a friend and a mentor. And I thought Peter did a great job. I mean, I think he really brought the two worlds of Tom Ford, the men's and the women's, together really beautifully. And I think he really is such an amazing tailor. And the make looked, I think, exceptional. And I loved the color palette as well. I thought that was really great. And I thought it was a terrific start.
It was nice to see his wife there cheering him on. And that's something that you talked a lot about in your interview, the relationship that she has with him and as a sort of muse.
You know, I met with Peter a few weeks before the show, and he's someone that's very generous about the people around him and the people that he works with. And he was talking a lot about the importance of Whitney. And they actually met working together at Gucci. She was working directly with Tom, and he was, I think, just a kind of a menswear designer. But they have, I think, a very strong relationship and a very close relationship, and it's a very supportive, mutually supportive relationship. And, you know, I think he was very keen to pay tribute to her and, you know, I think the support she gave him through this kind of process of taking on this role. And it was great to see her sitting front row of the show because she just was beaming with pride at her husband's debut.
Amazing.
What else happened in, is there anything
we
else in Milan?
We can't not talk about Prada.
I would
Prada
say if I'm so not great. In the tracksuit, glossy skirt and slingbacks.
I know what you're going to be in, the barn jacket.
The barn jacket and the fringe. I mean, I have to say, I thought it was exemplary Prada. It was a really terrific collection.
Yeah.
I like that the soundtrack of Vertigo was playing.
Yeah.
I know. It actually put me down a rabbit hole last night. I looked at like so many old Prada shows and listened to the soundtrack.
Oh, wow. That's
Yeah, with a friend of mine who came over and we were just like,
definitely sounds like it was a superlative Prada season.
Yes. I mean, Miu Miu, too.
I mean, great to see a woman leading the charge.
Oh, my
and having
God.
The best
do we need to talk about
season.
That?
Yes, we do.
Top of the show?
Yes, we need to talk about it. There was a lot of change this season. One in particular, Sarah Burton at McQueen. It was a very emotional goodbye. I mean, even just for me watching it on my phone, I felt how emotional it was. She got a standing ovation. I mean,
Naomi Campbell cried a single tear.
I mean, Naomi aside, I think that there were others who were also, you know, I just love that everybody gave her a standing ovation. People were hugging her, you know, Tim Blank, Sarah Moa. Like, it was very, felt very emotional.
I would agree. I mean, I think the thing with Sarah is that, again, like Peter Hawkins, she worked there almost her entire career. I mean, she started with Lee McQueen after she graduated. She worked as an intern. So she'd been there for 20 plus years. So it was her whole life, and her whole life had gone into that house. And I do remember seeing her first show after Lee McQueen had passed away. And it was also a very, very emotional moment, a very emotional experience. And one can love Sarah for the work and the incredible kind of work and the thought and the kind of craftsmanship and the sheer feats of imagination. But also, maybe this is more of a personal thing for me, but I also just loved the way that she was present, but then also kind of removed herself from the industry and, you know, really let the work speak for itself. I think she did it, but always with the most kind of grace and elegance, and she'll be very much missed.
Mm. All to say that there are very few women at the head of major houses. And if you look
because
at the
Because
they
stats, just announced her replacement, who is
a
gentleman.
Man, yes, Sean McGurr.
Yeah, so after Sean was announced, there was a flurry of online reaction sort of doing a grid of all of the faces of the brands at Kering, and the creative directors are all white men.
But it's not just Kering.
And then there were lists that followed that showed that every major fashion conglomerate basically had
There's
rosters.
There's a gender inequity. And I mean, not just gender. It's a problem, I think. When I think of all my favorite female designers, they're all independent. They all have very, you know, singular points of view. Like, why do we think this is happening?
It's an interesting question because obviously, you know, there are major, major talents, as you're saying, Shoma, young, independent, or not so young, independent female designers. I mean, you just think about, you know, Martine Rose and Grace Wells Bonner in London, or Simone or Roxanda. You know, you think about Bianca Saunders. You think about, you know, Marine Serre in Paris. It's a good question, and I don't actually have the answer. Mm.
There probably should be more women in all different departments across
Agreed.
Fashion.
Yeah.
And when there are more women in the C-suite and elsewhere, there will start to be more women designers.
Yeah, and hopefully also people of color. Like, we can't forget that. I think after the conversation that we had, you know, a few years ago, it feels like, I don't know, I'm not sure if addressing this, like, this system that is not in balance. Like, we're out of balance, you know, and I think you're right. It's not something you can fix overnight either. Those people, women, need to be mentored, nurtured. It takes time for a system to really change and for there to be equity, you know, in a system, because it just feels like it's not, there's something out of balance here.
I mean, I thought it was interesting watching the Maria Grazia show for Dior, her Dior show, and she brought in, is that an artist?
Yes, an Italian artist.
Who very kind of specifically kind of questioned the hierarchical, the systems, and very, very critical of it. But she seemed an interesting, I mean, I find Maria Grazia very interesting, and I like the work, and I like the way that she seems to be kind of challenging from within the whole idea of being, you know, at a established, esteemed French couture house, and has been quite unabashed about really bringing her personal politics and preoccupations to bear in the house, which I think has been terrific. And I was kind of interested what you thought, Nicole, about the actual show in terms of that narrative and how that played out.
I would say that the clothes themselves and the artwork around it, I didn't feel a lot of sort of, you know, merging and intermingling.
Right.
It felt like a backdrop. You know, on the other hand, I think you could say the way that Maria Grazia designs is sort of feminist to you know, to start with.
Well, it's honest about
it. It's honest.
And it's not a kind of sense of gilding or adorning.
Such exceptional, you know, embroideries. But I really think that word honest that you use is so good because, you know, women are crazy for it. It sells really, really well. And I think there is a, it is, you know, at least in part because she is a woman designing for women and sort of gets what, you know, what it takes to get through the day.
The Run Through will be back in just a moment.
I'm Bobby Finger.
And I'm Lindsay Weber.
Do you ever see a new face or name on your news feeds and say, who the heck is that?
Our podcast, Who Weekly, is everything you need to know about the celebrities you don't. Think of us as your cheat code to People Magazine, your glossary for Hollywood, a shortcut to understanding pop culture at large.
For the past 8 years, Who Weekly has been telling listeners everything they need to know about the celebrities they don't. The New Yorker says we spelunk deep into the demimonde with convivial delight. That's a direct quote.
Mostly, we're going to explain to you Irish star Barry Keoghan's sudden rise to fame and relationship with a not-so-under-the-radar pop princess named Sabrina.
The fake wedding Real Housewives star Cynthia Bailey had to promote a limo rental company.
And why all the Gen Zers you know are talking about a guy named Benson Boone.
Each episode goes deep into the biggest celebrity stories of the moment. And if you're still confused, we even have a weekly call-in episode where we answer the most burning celebrity queries.
Who Weekly airs twice weekly with brand new episodes on Tuesdays and Fridays. Listen and follow Who Weekly, an Odyssey podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Have you ever owned something that inspired you to up your game? Maybe a chef-grade range made you want to hone your cooking skills, or a high-tech tennis racket made you want to work on your backhand. I recently bought a new pair of running shoes, and that made me love hitting the pavement again. Well, when we own exceptional things, they inspire us to do exceptional things. The all-new Lexus GX has an exceptional capability that will have you seeing possibilities you never knew existed. Its advanced technology and luxurious interior mean that wherever you go, you'll never go without. Live up to the all-new Lexus GX, luxury beyond limits. Experience amazing at your Lexus dealer.
I felt like that you really felt the effect of the strike. There were absolutely, it was a season of day wear. Like nobody's, they're not dressing anyone to go anywhere.
I thought you were going to say because there were so many celebrities front row.
There were, but I just, yes. But I just felt like there was not that much evening wear. Like it felt like, okay, no one's going anywhere. We don't have any red carpet. I mean, maybe that's just incidental, but it obviously there are other reasons. I think people are stripping back and wanting to get to, maybe honest is like where people want to be, and dressing for real life feels more important right now, more urgent right now.
No, I did love it at Miu Miu, the idea that you wore your sparkly cocktail dress with a t-shirt under it, and a sandal. And maybe you held the shoe. I felt like there was a lot of holding of shoes.
Yeah, the Balenciaga shoe, the handbags were amazing at Balenciaga. Yeah. We didn't talk about Balenciaga yet.
Let's talk about Kathy Gate.
It wasn't just Kathy.
Kathy Horan, who is the longtime New York Times fashion reviewer and now writes fashion criticism and features for New York Magazine. She wrote about the experience of walking in the Balenciaga show. And there was a sort of pearl-clutching moment when she walked in Balenciaga.
It
was like, oh, how does she maintain her objectivity while walking in a show, which I think
it was pretty nervy of her to do it, knowing how catty everyone in the fashion industry is. And, you know, everyone had an opinion, I'm sure.
Right. I mean, Matt Schneier did it.
For Vaquera, yeah.
For Vaquera.
For the New York Times.
And he got the Vaquera walk down as well.
Joe Ellison did it for Dolce & Gabbana.
Yeah.
There is a history of this.
Yeah.
I like this. Okay. Yeah.
I got asked once, but the brand shall remain nameless.
What made you say no, Mark?
I was so flattered, but also deeply shy and mortified. So I was like.
So Demna really cast this with women that he admired and
his husband, too. Yes.
And his husband was the bride, right?
Yeah, I love that.
Okay. And did we like the show? Or we just liked the pomp and circumstance of the show?
I liked the fact that a lot of those pieces were made with upcycled and found items of clothing. And anytime a designer is doing that kind of thing, I think it sends the right message. There's a lot of stuff in the world, and we all need to figure out how to become more conscious consumers. And the fact that he could make really, really glamorous evening dresses out of those, out of used clothes, used dresses at the end, all of like that turquoise dress, that gold dress, those were all like found dresses.
Mm. I love those.
Yeah, I also loved there was ones that looked like they were slightly wrinkled as well, which seemed to refer to the couture show that he did. You remember he did that incredible couture show? It was all the kind of T-shirts and pants looked like they'd been kind of wet and then dried on the body. They had these, all of these kind of wrinkles and creases kind of built in. But I agree with Nicole. I mean, also what I love about Demna's work is that there's consistency there as well. So when you buy into Balenciaga, it does not feel disposable. It does not feel that it's something that's a one-season wonder. You know, I mean, I liked all of the kind of bias-pleated dresses. That's something he's kind of done before. I like the kind of oversized outerwear. It's things he's done before. I mean, there's a kind of language and a narrative there that feels very true to him.
And Isabelle Huppert narrated it, which I love.
Yes, I thought the soundtrack was incredible, the way it built and built and
built. What was she saying?
She was talking about how you make a jacket.
Oh, wow. So he's still keeping his sort of last season's focus on the art of making clothing.
Yes, there. I think he wanted it to, you know, what he was saying backstage is that, you know, what was the quote that Sarah used in the review? I can't castrate myself. Like, he just has to be him. And it felt really, personal. And those are the best shows, I think, when they feel personal.
Agreed.
What is an example of a show that you unexpectedly loved?
Well, Maison Margiela was my season highlight.
Yeah, everyone was saying
that. It was stupendous. It was stupendous.
Aww.
Maison Margiela, another story about designer making incredibly beautiful pieces with scraps.
Mm.
Those hats were made out of wire and bin bags, as the Brits say. And
incredible.
Yeah. Gorgeous silhouettes for evening, but then just really, really good tailoring.
I mean, for me, unexpectedly, Max Mara, and that's no criticism of all the kind of, you know, wonderful things that Max Mara makes, all those beautiful camel coats, but I loved this Max Mara show in Milan. I thought it was great. I mean, a ton of cotton, a ton of really great kind of jackets, kind of casual kind of utility jackets. Really beautiful color palette. Don't know if I already said that, but I thought the color palette was great. I loved the fact that everything looked kind of washed and a little bit worn and comfortable.
People were talking about the undercover show.
That was excellent, too. But I was not surprised to like that because I always like undercover. Jun Takahashi is just so talented and season after season surprises.
He's warped in the best possible way.
Ooh, nice. Nicely put. He was talking about loss last season, and he was still talking about it, losing people who he was close to. And I think he's sort of feeling his middle age, thinking about mortality a little bit. And so he ended the show with these incredible dresses that were basically terrariums full of plants, living plants and living butterflies.
With sort of...
But no bed bugs.
No.
Thank God.
And they were lit very beautifully. They almost look like jellyfish to me.
Yes. They lit up as they came down the runway.
Wow.
Yeah.
It felt like Usher was having a moment. What was the front row like? Were there any folks?
Usher was in town doing concerts.
Right.
A lot of people went to see Usher during Paris Fashion
Week.
He's
going to be doing the Super Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, he's been on the show. He's a big fan of Rick
Owens. We're very close with Usher.
Yes.
I mean, my only thing when he went to Balenciaga is I might have lost the face mask. That was the only, I mean, he was kind of incredible jacket and kind of semi-concealing face mask. I might have lost the mask.
Oh, right, okay.
And then to Marnie, he wore like a Horton Wears a Here's a Who polka dot thing.
Yes, Erica Badu was in a similar polka-dotted outfit, and she was there as well.
And she was like the Cat in the Hat.
She was also on the soundtrack of the Bottega show.
Yeah, she was at Bottega.
Yeah.
And she was at Bottega.
Yeah.
And looked amazing, as she does.
Yeah, what was Marnie like to be there?
Well, it was incredible because it was at Karl Lagerfeld's old house in Paris the Rue de l'Université, in his hotel particulier, if that's how you say it. And I had never been there. A lot of people in fashion have obviously been there because Carl used it as a place to do photo shoots. Sometimes it has been emptied out of all of his stuff. and Francesco at Marni put these sort of like balloon-like seats. So we were all bouncing up and down as we waited for Erica and Usher. and then the collection culminated in these incredible evening dresses that were made from cutout flowers or cutout prints of flowers. And at first I thought, oh my gosh, it's a dress made of stickers because they were sort of coming off, but it was fabric that he had printed. And then, you know, each of them were cut out and really like couture. Mm-hmm.
Did people care about Rick Owens?
I like that it's older models too.
Yeah. I mean, I'd say both Rick and YSL, those were two shows I would love to have seen, particularly Saint Laurent, because I love the way that Anthony Vaccarello has kind of constantly kind of challenged himself and rethought his relationship to the house, both in terms of its, you know, legacy, heritage. And I just thought this was like a super chic show.
The safari jumpsuits were great.
Yeah,
and
amazing.
Usually I'm like, oh, yeah. I mean, I like Saint Laurent, but this time I was like, oh,
more cotton.
Like, yeah.
More cotton.
It's true. It's true.
I like going to Saint Laurent now because Anthony is so confident. You know, he does these shows and it's a very, very strong message. And sometimes, you know, like last season, it's just one thing, you know, it's just this really strong jacket. And that when a designer is confident like that, it's pretty hard to resist.
Yeah. Real courage of his convictions. It's very impressive.
How do you think we did as a fashion month as far as size diversity?
Oh, still feels a bit kind of tokenistic. I'd left Milan by the time, and I've forgotten the name of the designer.
Caroline Vito.
Yeah, I wish I'd seen that because that looked kind of terrific.
She's based in the UK, and Dolce & Gabbana each season work with Katie Grant to identify an up-and-coming designer, most often from London. And this season, it was Caroline Vito, and she is very, you know, that is her thing. She wants to put women who you don't see on the runway most of the time on the runway. And, you know, when I saw her backstage, she was talking about that. I hope I can, you know, by doing this, I can show other designers that it can be done. And cool clothes too, right? Very, very bodycon and, you know, lots of cutouts and doing very interesting things with like silver, almost like ergonomically bent pieces that stretch across the cutouts.
Yeah, it was sad that Estemanis have kind of taken a bit of a pause. They did a show last season that was incredible in a church. They made a very strong statement and really committed to the idea of, again, like Nicole was saying, about just trying to diversify the runway to be just more reflective of everyone, not just a very narrow, no pun intended, idea of beauty or physicality.
I did love seeing Yuzult. She wore one of those beautiful rose dresses at Cannes.
Okay.
So she walked the show, I think, for the first time, and she also walked to Balenciaga. Mm. She's a curvy woman, and it was really great to see.
I mean, I also would kind of praise Virginie Viard at Chanel for actually diversifying her runway too. I mean, she's something she's conscious of and she's doing as well.
Yeah, a lot of the time it is, going back to the, you know, discussion about women designers, a lot of the time it's women designers who are doing this. And another reason we need more of them.
Size inclusivity, sustainability, women lead on all of the things. Just saying. Thanks, Nicole. Thanks, Mark.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Love having you.
That was really fun.
That's it for this episode of The Run Through.
The Run Through of Vogue is a production of Condé Nast Entertainment.
The show is produced by Susie Lechtenberg, Chelsea Daniel, and Alex John Burns. It's engineered by Jake Loomis and Gabe Quiroga and mixed by Mike Kutchman.
See you soon.
Bye.
Hi, we're Carlene and Jill, hosts of Breaking Beauty Podcast, the show all about the breakthrough people, products, and moments in beauty. On our show, you're going to find hella inspiring guests like Emily Weiss of Glossier, and you'll get beauty tips galore from the top pros in the industry, like Kim Kardashian's makeup guru, and you'll hear skincare secrets from the likes of Dr. Pimple Popper. Plus, you'll get shopping help with our Damn Goods episodes, where we review the latest products hitting store shelves to let you know what's actually worth your money. Listen every Wednesday to Breaking Beauty Podcast.